Our series, we move naturally on to the second most important commandment. We spent our time last week looking at the first, the most important commandment of love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And it makes sense that if we tick that box, that's the most important thing we can do, then the flow on from that, quite naturally, is to love our neighbour. To love our neighbour as ourselves. And that is the most natural thing to do because of how God has made us. If we love God, we love Him with all our being, then we're going to love those that He creates in His image. Did not go. There we go. So God created mankind in His own image. In the image of God, He created them. Male and female, He created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground." It makes sense, doesn't it, if we love God, that we then love those who are made in His image. We bear His image, His creativity, His nature, His self-will. Some of His value and worth has been given to us because we are His image. Of course, we just bear His image. We are not God. But our very nature, being in His image, means there is worth and value that is ours because it is ours from Him. It's not given to any other part of creation. I took Nathan and Zoe to the aquarium with one of Nathan's friends during the holidays. All the kids had an activity pack that you could carry around, and it said that you could get stamps. And now in my mind, I thought ink and then realized that one is ink is expensive and messy. And so after the first time, I realized it's actually an embossing thing. So it embosses each paper. So there's an octopus or a shark or a type of fish. And you push down and it embosses. Little trick if you're going to the aquarium, push down, release, and then go again. It's much better emboss. But that is an image of the animal. It's not the actual animal. It is purely an image of it. But you can tell what that is. And if you like sharks, then you'll like the embossed image of a shark. We too carry the image of God. Not just His image, but also His blessing. He blesses humanity, again, in a way that no other part of creation gets. For us to love God, and yet not love those made in His image and blessed by Him, is simply incongruous. The first and second most important commandments flow seamlessly. To love God truly means that we will love those that He chooses to love. Surely we would love those who are like Him. And we all may nod and agree, and in Mark's gospel we see Jesus give this as a response to someone who is seeing His answers as good. So in Mark's gospel we have an account where a teacher of the law comes up, sees Jesus giving good answers to things, and gives Him the question, and when the question is answered, He says, "No, that is a great answer." That's what we see in Mark's gospel. This is someone who sees it as the most important. In Luke's gospel, we see a different moment in Jesus' life when a teacher of the law is wanting to test Jesus. He's coming up to try to trap Him. He's trying to close down the circle of who could be his neighbour. He comes up to Jesus and asks the question, and Jesus gives him the answer, and he says, "Yep, great, God is one, love God. But who is my neighbour?" He's trying to narrow that down very, very closely. So we're going to answer that question of who is our neighbour, but we're also going to answer another question, which I think is how. I think they're the two inner questions we have, who and how. Who is my neighbour, and how do I love them? Who do I have to love? Luke 10 tells us this teacher of the law is trying to justify himself. "Oh yeah, I love my neighbour. He's a great friend. He's just literally my neighbour. We get on well." He wants to make sure that he is following the two most important commandments, even if one has a bit of a caveat. "I love my neighbour, my literal neighbour, we get on well." So Jesus tells this parable. It's a parable we probably know well. A man who is beaten on the road. And he's left for dead. He is left there to die. He's robbed and lying there completely vulnerable. A priest and a Levite cross over on the other side of the road. They don't want a bar of him. Neither care for him, and they just want to keep on going. But then a Samaritan comes along and takes pity on him. Now, when we're going through Luke's parables, I said this as we went through them earlier this year, but when we're going through Luke's parables, we need to look for the shocking bit. All of Luke's parables have a shocking bit in them for the hearers of the day. And the shocking bit is that it's a Samaritan who does this. The Samaritan takes pity on him. He binds his wounds and pours oil and wine over them. He takes him to an inn and takes care of him there. He then pays for 24 days worth of food and a roof over his head, and then promises more for any expense the innkeeper has in caring for him. So who is our neighbour? The Samaritan, of course, which would have been a very bitter thing for the teacher of the law to say. And so he doesn't. If you look in Luke, he doesn't say the Samaritan. He says the man who took pity on him. That's how much he hates Samaritans. He couldn't bear himself to say it. So who is our neighbour? How about this person? Would we count this person as our neighbour and someone to love? He's a bit younger there than he is now, but everyone likes Chris Hemsworth. What about this one? People big fans of Helen Mirren. I tossed up which one to go, and I went with Helen Mirren. Yep. What about this person? No one has a bad thing about Bindi, right? Everyone could love Bindi. Ash Barty, what's not to like? What about this person? I think the laughs betray a little bit about us, don't they? Jesus calls the teacher of the law not just to love his mates, not just to love his fellow Jews, not just to love the people in his tribe, not just for those who can do something for him, but to love someone who he thinks poorly of, a dirty Samaritan, to love someone who he hates, the Samaritans who didn't keep blood purity, the Samaritans who actually gave up the Jews, to love someone who has different views. Jesus confronts this when he talks to the woman and says, "You worship what you do not know." To love someone who the animosity of has gone back generations. This isn't just a minor disagreement. This is generational hatred. And Jesus says, well, isn't he more of the neighbour? To love our neighbour self-sacrificially, to love our neighbour at a cost, a great cost. He pours oil and wine on the man's wounds. He cares for them. He puts him on his own donkey. He pays for 24 days, two days worth of wages, which is worth 24 days worth of food and board. To give dignity and worth when it's been taken. That is the story. The man's dignity and value has been stolen and taken, and it's been restored by the Samaritan. It is such a powerful story. Such a strong parable. It shows the extravagance of love, doesn't it? It shows the lengths to which love must go. Jesus' parable shows who our neighbour is. It tells us the boundaries have to come down. They must come down because all people are in the image of God. All people have the image of God impressed upon them. But I think our problem also lies in this story, in that it's a very heroic point and demonstration of love, isn't it? It's very easy for us to read that parable and go, oh yeah, I'd do that. Of course we would do that. I'm sure we've heard the story, someone at some point explained how they would have done something different in a crisis. You listen to the news and then someone goes, oh, I would have done this and it would have been over quickly. There have been a number of comments made on social media in light of the shooting at the White House Correspondents' Dinner about what people would have done. As the government officials were rushed out by the Secret Service and their wives ran behind, people latched onto that and made comments about how brave they would have been and how heroic they would have been in that situation. It's very easy to say when you're looking at your phone or your computer screen sipping a latte in a cafe or in our own house. It's a little distant from the actual event. And we do the same thing when it comes to love. It's easy to love extravagantly at a distance when we don't have to actually do anything. We can say that we're going to love big, can't we? We'd need to love like the Samaritan, and sure, we'd all be there. We'd love with reckless abandon. It's easy to say. So we're going to look at where Jesus gets the command from. It's Leviticus 19. We find the commandment to love your neighbor as yourself. It comes after a list of behaviors. If you've got your Bibles, you can turn to them. We'll only go through a few. When reaping the harvest of your land, do not reap to the edges of the field or gather that which falls on the ground. Don't go over the vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that fall to the ground. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner. Leave them for the people who haven't earned them. They've done nothing for you and can't. Do not steal. Do not lie. Do not deceive one another. Do not defraud or rob your neighbor. Do not hold back the wages of a hired worker overnight. Do not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block in front of the blind. Do not pervert justice or show partiality. Do not spread slander. Do not do anything that endangers your neighbor's life. Do not hate your fellow Israelite. Instead, rebuke them frankly so you don't share in their guilt. Do not seek revenge or bear a grudge, but love your neighbor as yourself. What a boring list. It's so mundane, isn't it? Mundane in the truest sense of the word. It's all very earthly. There's nothing big about it. Don't reap to the edge of your field. It's not really heroic love, is it? I mean, it's giving up some income. It's all stuff that's very much rooted in day-to-day life. That is the list that God gives us not to do, but instead, love our neighbor. It all makes sense to show love for others, to leave the edges and that which has fallen impacts on people's lives in massive ways. It could be life-saving to the poor and the foreigner, those who don't have work, those who have nothing, those who cannot earn. And yet it's a tiny little bit, isn't it, for the person who has the field? The grapes that have fallen on the ground or you might have missed as you walk past. The landowner may never meet them. They may never get told thanks. Do not do things that treat others as less than. Do not do anything that is harmful. Do not take advantage of someone's situation. Paul uses a similar list in Colossians 3, 5-14. Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature. Sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires and greed, which is idolatry. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming. You used to walk in these ways in the life you once lived, but now you must also rid yourselves of all things such as these. Anger, rage, malice, slander, filthy language from your lips. Do not lie to each other, since you have taken off your old self with its practices, and you have put on the new self, which is being renewed in the knowledge in the image of its creator. Here there is no Gentile or Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave or free, but Christ is all and is in all. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. The walls have gone. We need to love with no barriers, Paul says. Because in Christ, those barriers are gone. We see the value of people. And again, he gives us a pretty boring list, doesn't he? The second most important thing we can do is to love our neighbour. To love those who aren't just our best friends. To love those who aren't just like us. To love those who can't repay us or do anything for us. There's a number of ways that we can demonstrate our love. Witnessing to who Jesus is and what he's done and what he's accomplished is one of them. This man here is called Penn Jillette. If you don't know who he is, he's a magician, you can see because he's holding cards and has a funny face. He's part of a comedy magic duo called Penn and Teller. They are brilliant. They are really funny. They are really good. They have a show called Penn and Teller Fool Us, which the old ones are better when it's in England. Just being forewarned there for you if you watch it. He is not a Christian. And yet, he has a clip where he says, believers who do not tell people the gospel don't love. He relates it to a bus that is coming down the road and someone is on the road and it's going to hit them. And he says, how could you say you love that person and not warn them that a bus is coming? Now, clearly, he hasn't taken that warning. He doesn't believe. But he sits there and talks about how Christians have to evangelize because we think a bus is coming. We know a bus is coming. How could we not warn people and say, oh, no, we love them. We're just happy to see them get hit by a bus. We know what is coming. We know the way to salvation. We know the way to life. For us to truly love the other, we have to witness. We have to express that faith. We've got to explain the gospel. We can love practically. Yes, we have to. But if we give someone bread for today and not introduce them to the bread of life, how have we loved them? We've not filled their most grievous need. Do we enjoy salvation? Would we not want someone else to enjoy it as well? Again, that is still big, I think. And again, it's easy for us to do. So let's get into the real nitty-gritty. Let's think about how we can really love ourselves and how we can really love our neighbour as we do ourselves. Do we have a favourite seat? We would love ourselves to choose that seat, wouldn't we? Who is in the same chair they were in last week? Hands up. Oh, we've got some rebels. I like it. Now, sometimes that's just practical, right? We sit up the back because that's where the kids' table is. We sit in the same seat every week. The question is, how do we respond when somebody sits in our seat? That's right. Now we laugh. It is ridiculous. Until it's not. I remember a service when I was in Canberra. I was doing the sound and video projection. A lady came in who was a visitor and she sat down in a seat. What she didn't know was she sat down in a particular lady's seat. So that lady got to that spot and stood and glared at her until she left. She didn't change seats. She left. What love did she feel there? Like, it's ridiculous, isn't it? But what love did she feel when this lady got so upset about an uncomfortable wooden seat? They were all the same. All wood, all uncomfortable. It's basic, but it's something we do struggle with because it's the basic stuff. Do we have a favourite style of worship? We prefer hymns or we prefer modern stuff. We prefer this or that. But loving our neighbour means we actually seek their betterment. We seek their preference. Now, there are helpful elements to worship, so please don't hear me say we can just go crazy. But when it comes to preference, a lot of the time we take it as gospel. If we sit in the place of we do hymns because I like hymns and I don't want anything to do modern because I like hymns, does that not say to the person who prefers modern stuff, I don't care about you? Both are helpful for worship, but an attitude that says my preference must trump all else is not loving. The other way too. So if we all said, no, we're all going to do modern stuff because we all like modern stuff and never do any hymns, how is that loving those who enjoy hymns? If my attitude says that my preference is how it must be, then I'm not loving. Loving our neighbour means seeking their good. It means seeking what will help them. And let's be honest, if we all love each other and we all try to provide that other person's preference is suited, we'll be okay, won't we? What we do to make our service for us, style, arrangement, the plan, the content, the different elements, morning tea, the time, how long we go. I'll finish soon, don't worry. Disruptions or noise. Again, here is good. I've only seen people smile when they hear the kids make noise. But at Knox, there was someone who turned around and scowled every time kids made noise. Now, my thing was just sit somewhere else, dude. This is where all the kids have to go. But how was that loving? Disruption for him, but he scowled at anyone came in, visitors included. Would we be willing to do for others what we would want to do for ourselves? To love in a way that seeks what is helpful for them. to love in a way that makes church approachable for them. And again, like everything, if we are concerned with loving one another, if that's what we're all doing, then everyone is loved and everyone feels loved and everyone gets what they want. Because if we're just fighting each other, one of us is going to lose. But if we are always fighting for each other, then we're always all going to win, aren't we? Because if I fight for hymns, for someone who likes hymns, and we have hymns, I go, oh, it's great they're getting hymns, I feel good. And if they're fighting, it's a bad example because I like hymns, but if they're fighting for modern music for me, then when we do modern music, they feel good because there's modern music, and I feel good because there's modern music. If we fight for each other out of love, then we're going to feel loved. It's amazing how God gives us the way to have the best life, isn't it? We may say we love our neighbour. It's very easy to say, and it's very easy to do the big stuff. But when the rubber hits the road, do we actually love our neighbour? The most important is to love the Lord our God with all our heart, with all our soul, and with all our mind, and with all our strength. The second is to love our neighbour as ourselves. They are the most important commandments according to Jesus. We're going to hear now how love can be practical. So David and Margaret, or David, I don't know if it's a duo or a single, are now going to interview Dawn and Graham about how they practically love their neighbour.